Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Hey, it's Sprague here. Really appreciate you listening. You're about to get some podcast excellence. It's presented by Les Schwab Tires, doing the right thing since 1952.
Slipping and injured is Zion Williamson. Back the other way, a layup for Cam Johnson. And 36 seconds into the game, Zion Williamson is down.
He blew through his shoe.
Yeah.
This is Dirt and Sprague.
Smart play to use clock.
And a chance for a three-point play, and that should just about do it, to say the least, as Johnson gets to the rim easily.
Every time Duke is threatened, Carolina has had the answer.
With Andy Dirt Johnson and Brendan Sprague.
The preparation that you would have for the game is obviously based on your players being there. It puts everyone in a state of, you know, trying to figure it out while you're playing an outstanding team. That's not a good situation.
Dirt and Sprague on 1080 The Fan.
All right, 12:02 in the Rose City. Time for Dirt and Sprague on Portland Sports Leader. 1080 The Fan, Brandon Sprague, Andy Dirt Johnson in with you on this beautiful, gorgeous Thursday afternoon.
I feel like it's okay and safe to say that it's a nice day today and it's not like hailing over half of our audience right now like it was yesterday.
Until somebody texts us, guys, I'm in Woodburn. It's coming down hard.
It's like we got 4 inches of snow down here, man. I did finally get the hail when I got home yesterday. Did you guys get any hail?
No.
No, you didn't have any. Huh?
I think I got some sprinkling. That was really it. I ended up playing basketball yesterday.
Did you
after
really
work.
Outside or in?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was weird. I was going to pick my kids up, and where I was playing, my nephew was playing. He's 10.
Did you go dunk on some little kids?
They wanted to raise hoop 10 feet, so no. I have before. I have no shame in doing it.
I think that'd be a lot of fun. Walking around like your bowl out there, just swatting shots left and right.
Well, it was one of those, random, gonna walk into the house, and they go, hey, why don't you shoot? And then I'm shooting real far shots, and we're having bets on it. Like, if I miss, I do 5 push-ups. If I make it, they run to the end of the block, which is probably a half mile.
Yeah.
And ended up playing 1 versus 8. It was 1-on-8 yesterday.
Did you win?
I did. I spotted him 9 points.
That's a prideful moment right there.
They didn't score. It was great.
Look at you, a little tune-up. They shouldn't. How tall are we talking here? Like, we're up to your waist height, right? Or a little bit taller than that?
10. They're probably around my belly button-ish area, maybe slightly taller.
Oh, you could dominate the paint in that regard. You're like 2001 Shaq out there.
Let's just say I got every rebound possible. Offense, defense, did not matter.
You're not getting that one.
And I walked away, I turned to the kids and I go, take that, Cleland! And I was like, oh, wait.
That's your tune-up?
I got to snap back into this. That's not Cam Cleland.
That's your tune-up for the big 3-on-3 showdown is dominating some fourth graders. I like it.
No, but it was fun because there's nothing more enjoyable than devastating a group of 10-year-olds the way that I did yesterday. They had to do push-ups. They had to do laps. It was. Then they were like, why don't you do them with us? And I was like,
no.
Because I won.
Yeah, I'm the winner here. I don't have to do anything. That's how this works. Welcome to society.
I'm Amazon. I don't pay taxes. You pay taxes. You're the little people.
You cover my expenses. I always think of the Billy Madison dodgeball scene where he goes out at lunch for the first time and just starts pegging kids left and right with big rubber balls. Like, that's a great scene.
I have no shame in people. Like, my brother-in-law is slightly different in that regard. He'll play with his kid or his kid and a couple buddies, and he'll, let them score. I have no part of me that's like, let them get even one. I'm swatting the crap out of them.
Well, we've talked about this before. Like, do you let your kids win? We had that conversation.
I know. We don't have to dive back into that.
I think there's a balance, though, in between the two of you. Like, you don't just let them score and let them get away with everything, but you don't necessarily need to block every single shot that they put up.
I mean, I don't get to everyone. You got ball movement with 6 kids. Somebody's going to get an open shot sometime.
You teach them a little teamwork right there. Move the ball around.
There was 2 bad moments, though, where I started to fear for my safety a little bit. I blocked a kid's shot so hard that the ball hit him square back in the face. He fell on his back, knocked the wind out of himself, and cried for about 3 minutes.
Ooh, did you just move the drill or did you keep playing?
I got him up and I told him to sit on the rocks to the side and we kept playing.
Yeah, that's like a total meet the parents moment playing volleyball in the pool.
Yeah, he breaks the lady's nose.
Spikes it in her face. Jeez, and, Brandon.
And then I had another moment where the ball rebounded. I took one step, like one slow step. I was just going to grab it with one hand because it was funny watching them jump as high as they could and they couldn't even get to my elbow. And there was one tall kid of the group. He ran in to get the rebound from me. And he was behind me, and I didn't see him. I grabbed the ball, and all I felt was like this kind of like slap against my back. I turned around. He's holding his arm. He's on the ground. He's like, "You didn't move at all. That hurt me." I'm like, "Oh,
sorry.
Yeah, you're not going to move me, man.
Sorry. I mean, I got a few more pounds on you there, buddy. I don't know what to tell you.
Are you even 100 pounds? Probably not yet. You'll get there, but you're not there yet."
I got to say that, like, looking forward to future children, that is one of the things that excites me the most, is being able to dominate on the court again one day against somebody that's half your size.
Oh, yeah.
Get the hoop up in the basement, dominate in the basement. You go out in the backyard. You know, do the old Peyton Manning skit where you're chucking footballs at him and stuff, you know?
But let me tell you, too, as a parent, not only, like, the domination of him, because sometimes bringing him to tears, I don't care what anybody texts in right now. I'm just going to be real honest about this. Parenting's hard. It's hard.
I'd say so.
It requires a lot of your time.
Yeah.
Your life goes down the drain when you're a parent. I mean, you only get so many moments to yourself. That's why I cherish showers so much, because it's like 5 minutes of me time. You're going to enjoy the times you bring them to tears. Not every time. You lecture them, you teach them a moment, you feel bad. But when you're dominating them in a sport to the point of tears, I think you're going to take joy in it. I think there's going to be moments where you're like, yeah, well, you know what? Shut up.
Some slight satisfaction out of that.
Welcome to real life.
You're eating up my life for 18 years. You're going to cost me like $500,000.
My boss blocked my shot 3 times in contract negotiations. How do you think I felt? Right. Did I cry?
I wanted to go home and cry.
No.
But I didn't. Life lessons right there.
Yes. So I want you to know that when they get to that point, I think you're going to find some joy in it.
Okay. Joe, do you make your kid cry?
Not on purpose. I mean,
well, Joe and his kid play Legos together, so
well,
no, really
no
crying.
I mean, the weather is turning. There's a nice little 7-foot hoop close to my house, and we played basketball a little bit last year. And there
wait, are you playing on somebody else's hoop?
No, it's like a playground hoop.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So there's 10-footers, and then
neighbors
there's
down the streets go, let's go dunk on their hoop.
Yeah, and then there's a 7-foot, and yeah, we had a few games. I had one game where I went up 10-0 on him right away, and then I let him come back so I could teach him the lesson to never give up.
Yeah, you also gave him false confidence.
Yeah, but then that 10-0 run that I had, oh, yeah, that ball was being sent into the 15th row. Yeah, he was not having any fun at that point.
I try and think back to my days as a kid, though. Even with that, like, you, it's a little condescending. You know when they're letting you score. Like, even at the age of, like, 7, if your dad's letting you score in the driveway, you realize that he's allowing you to do it.
Sure. Like, he's blocking your shot for a majority, and
then
suddenly
all
you're
of a sudden
shots.
You're just swerving right by him and he can't keep up with you. It's like, I'm picking up what you're doing right
I
now.
I think he's at that age where he can't do that.
He can't quite
connect
the dots.
This spring and summer, he might pick up on that, and then I can't just go and turn it off, turn it on when I want, you know?
Well, you can't, but that's the beauty of it, man.
It's definitely a tough battle, trust me, because there are times where I just want to 11 spot him real quick, game over. Hey, this is reality, bud. This is what you asked for.
Well, what I do is, like, because if I play, my daughter's playing basketball for the first time this year, and not to get too corny and cheesy the other way, what you will also find a lot of joy and enjoyment is if they pick up a sport you love.
Yeah, so they, like, follow in your footsteps.
She played soccer. She liked it. I think she just liked being part of a team and having, like, she was doing something, you know? She loves basketball, and I didn't push it on her. I don't make her watch NBA games with me.
Yeah, it just kind of happened.
She just loves playing it, and that's been the cool part. We have, like, a mini, you know, one of those mini hoops. We got one of the really nice ones from Sharper Image. It's like the plastic glass-looking stuff.
Oh, that's a good hoop.
Dude,
right,
it's
there.
Got a legit rim on it.
That's nice.
And she shoots on that every night. She does dribbling stuff once in a while. Like, that part, too, take out the winning and losing. That part is really kick-ass, is when they identify something that they love to do. And I have found that outside of sports, too. Like, she enjoyed doing different art things. Whatever they end up liking, you immediately feel this, like, sense of it's awesome.
Yeah, like the immediate sense of pride.
Yes.
Especially if it's something that you like, too.
Well, and if they
it doesn't have to be sports. Could have been something you were into as a kid, I'd imagine.
Well, and I have two girls. I got no little men in the house. I don't plan on having a third kid. So this is kind of it. So maybe they're into sports. Maybe they won't be.
Hey, we got a good state for women's basketball right now.
Future Oregon State Beaver
Oregon Duck. You know, maybe she's maybe she wants to go up north a little bit, or south, I should say.
Yeah, she wants to pave her own path, Dad.
Yeah,
jeez.
Come on. You just said you're not forcing her into things. Let her pick what school she wants to go to.
Now, is that odd for people? Because I know of one family who this happened to. So Alex Crawford, who many of you may or may not know, he used to work with the Fan, used to produce with Dusty and Cam. He left, that was almost a year ago.
That was about a year ago.
Sounds about right.
So he left a year ago. He moved back to where he grew up in California, in L.A. His dad went to Oregon State. I believe his grandpa went to Oregon State.
Yeah, his whole family is OSU.
He went to Oregon State. Yeah. They're from the L.A. area. And his youngest brother went to Oregon. And that was a very controversial move for their family. But his brother's really into track. He got, he got away. He talked his way onto the track team. So now he travels with the Oregon track team, which is kick ass. So he made the right decision for his future.
Of course he did. Yeah.
But that's still got to be a slightly weird dynamic, does it not?
No.
Root against one program your whole life and then your kid...
See, no, there's a difference there, though. That would come in if your kid was actually, like, playing for the team that you rooted against. Like, if you have an issue with your kid just going to college.
Okay, I'll use you.
At the university.
I'm going to use you.
Whereas you don't have to root for Oregon. Like, his dad doesn't have to root for the Oregon football team now.
You're going to have a little man.
Okay.
Your first kid is going to be a boy. It's Dirt Jr. Dirt Jr. grows up, ends up being a damn good baseball player.
Hey, way to go, Dirt Jr.
Really good genes from the mom.
Hey, whoa. Hey.
So he ends up being a really good baseball player. He gets a full ride scholarship to Washington.
I'd have no problem rooting for the Huskies.
Oregon and Oregon State, he chooses the Huskies?
I'd have no problem with it. You support your family.
Do you go to the game and rock the gear? Hey, Dad,
Sure. Sure,
I'd wear my Husky shirt.
I'd wear a Husky baseball shirt.
You're a good parent.
Absolutely.
You're a good parent.
Dude, there's a difference, though. Like, if he just grows up, like let's say he ends up...
I don't think this is as easy as you're making it seem,
I
know ultimately where you're coming from.
Right.
It's a good place.
Well, here's the difference, though. Like, let's say little Dirt Jr. just happens to be a lot smarter than his old man and can get into Washington. Like, he wants to go to some program that is at Washington. Some academic thing.
Did you just acknowledge that Washington is for smarter people?
Of course it is. I would never not acknowledge that.
Okay.
All right. That's different, though. Like, I wouldn't start rooting for Washington just because he attends school there. There's a complete difference. If they're playing a sport at that university, you have to support them and root for them.
So what if it's football?
Yes.
It doesn't matter?
Ask Hugh Millen this. Hugh Millen's going to have to rock an Oregon hat.
Yes, he is.
And you had...
he doesn't have to rock... I don't know if Hugh Millen will rock an Oregon hat.
I think he kind of has.
I can see him showing up.
His son's the quarterback of the Ducks. He's not going to rock an Oregon sweatshirt.
I can see Hugh Millen showing up, but I've also met and talked with Hugh Millen. That guy bleeds purple and gold.
You had this with Alex Molden. And his kid went to Washington.
He's
one of the all-time great Oregon Ducks, and his kid went to play at Washington. And I guarantee you, he supports Washington football. Now,
but does he support his son or does he support the football team? I think you can separate the two.
Sure.
Like, hey, I hope you have success.
Right, you don't want the team to go 0-12. You don't want your kid to go through an 0-12 season.
Well, if he's having a stud career, who cares? What do you care?
And Jake Locker's parents happy they go 0-12 as long as he's a top 10 pick.
Is Molden's kid rocking UW gear? Or is he just going to the games? So there's a difference here. What I'm saying is you obviously always root for your kid.
I'd imagine there's gear involved when you go to a game to support your kid. Like at the bare minimum, a jersey. Like you wear your kid's jersey or something.
I just think it's fair to go. It's not so simple to go rock your arch rival's gear, right? Like if my daughter is ever good enough and Oregon State offer a scholarship in hoops. And she goes, I love Kelly Graves. He's been there 25 years.
I want to go to Oregon.
I'm going to Oregon. I'm like, look, I'm really happy that you have found a place that you're comfortable at, that you think works best for who you are. Congrats. Go kill him. I don't know if I'm rocking duck gear at her first
game. You would.
I might. I really don't think I am.
You would get into it. She's out there. The crowd's chanting her name. She's wearing an Oregon jersey. You would totally get into it.
Or I wear regular clothes, put a beaver pin on, and feel a lot of pride hearing them chant my last name.
Oh, get the hell out of here. There is no chance that happens. And then once they're gone, you're done. It's over. You can go back to rooting against them and being anti that program.
But it's not done because now your son, who was a stud football player at Washington for 5 years because he redshirted, he is now in your life till you die, always rooting against you on the biggest game of your regular season.
Yeah, see, that's okay, though. It's fun to have family rivalries. Like, the Crawfords made a big deal out of that, out of his brother going to Oregon. I just laughed at that. Like, really? That's that big of a deal? You can't have Thanksgiving dinners no more? How do people handle politics?
It's not that serious.
Like, are we all in the same political party and families? Like, Democrats and Republicans can't eat together at Thanksgiving anymore?
You can't eat with my older brother if you bring up politics. He will go off the deep end. I'm not kidding. That is a no-no at our family dinners.
Yeah, then you corral him back in or you make fun of him.
Yeah, I mean, eventually gets to that point.
Sure. Yeah. Right. You're like, just shut up, okay?
I don't know what the text line is saying about this topic. I'm sure it's mostly like people understanding that you root for your, and I'm not saying you don't root for your kid. I'm just saying if your kid goes to your arch rival, do you rock the arch rival gear? Do you root for the team? Can you just root for your kid without caring about the team's success? I don't know. It's a tricky one that you grow up with as a parent. All right, we got a good show today. We have a lot to get to. John Wilner of the Bay Area News Group. He's going to join us at 1 o'clock. We'll bring him on. He wrote that article on the Pac-12. You know, I really just want to know, what is the future of the Pac-12? What's the future of Larry Scott as the commissioner in the Pac-12? So John Wilner will join us today at 1 o'clock. We got the Joe's Plums at 2:15. We will get to that today as well. We've got, of course, the Daily Ticker to get to. We've got two stops to make, one in Seattle, one in Pittsburgh. We've got the Zion game that lasted all about 36 seconds. The NBA is back tonight, so some second half predictions. I want to get back into the Damian Lillard thing because Swag got us a 7-second clip from the Chris Haynes stuff. I want to play the full clip on staying loyal to Portland, get into that conversation because that was a big topic in the national sports landscape yesterday. We got a good show. We're on 1080 The Fan, at Dirt and Sprague, at Theodore Johnson, and at Brandon Sprague. Give us a follow. And the Better You Today text line is 55305. And very quickly, I heard yesterday on primetime that they said they thought they were responsible for killing the phone lines. We don't take calls here on the station.
We don't take,
100,000%. If Isaac and Suk are listening, you guys did kill the phones.
Yeah, they killed the phone, which is an okay thing.
Oh, yeah, I'm okay with it because I hated doing phones when I interned in Seattle before I knew much about radio. We couldn't do phones now. We have just not conditioned our listeners to do that. And by the way, do we really want to take phone calls all day? It's just lazy radio.
I know what Bob and Gresham thinks about this.
Yeah, well, Bob can text at 55305 and we can get his thoughts there. Okay, we'll start with Zion Williamson. Boy, the hype around that game, and it lasted all about 30 seconds. We'll start there on The Fan.
This is Dirt and Sprague, gone 1080, The Fan.
Text at the Better You Today text line. 16 minutes of garbage talk. No sports whatsoever. Blazers? Question mark. Anything. 1080 has gone downhill.
Bueller. I thought there was hybrid sports talk in that opening segment.
I mean, our ratings have never been higher, so if you say downhill, then I guess we just want to keep going downhill then.
Absolutely.
Sorry we didn't tickle your fancy the first minute with hot Blazers net conversations.
You must be new to the program.
Got to be new to the city or new to the station. Not really sure which it is, but
welcome aboard, my friend. Welcome aboard.
This is called casually welcoming you in to the radio show. That is.
Yeah, you got
to
let the opening segment breathe. I'm all for that.
Speaking of sports, how about that Duke UNC game that lasted all about 36 seconds? Did you watch the whole thing?
No,
I did.
Why?
Oh, Duke UNC will always get me to watch.
It was a blowout.
Yeah.
You stuck around, really, in the second half when UNC got up by 20?
Well,
I know they had just come back against Louisville, but there was a big piece missing from...
Who was that? Tim Reddish?
No, I think it's the... No, it's...
John Shire?
No, most exciting college player we've seen in maybe the last 10, 15 years.
Oh, Dick Grout, the 1952 Duke team. That's right.
Luke May was on the court. He dropped 32 points.
Luke May was dominant last night.
Hey, former Pitt Panther Cam Johnson.
Nobody cares.
He's better in Carolina.
Hey, once a Panther, always a Panther.
All right. Shut up, Joe.
All right, Joe.
I'm trying to think of like sporting events that have had that big a buzzkill that quickly. Because I went in, I was like a 10 out of 10 on the excitement scale.
I was jacked.
It was like, let's go. I can't wait to watch this. Zion, Obama's in the house. There's like 1,000 media members.
Spike Lee was courtside.
Spike Lee, like, let's do this. It's going to be dope. 36 seconds in. Done for the game. I spent most of the rest of the first half kind of on and off on my phone. I didn't change it. I kept the game on. I'm like looking at Twitter. I'm paying attention to their stuff kind of haphazardly. End up changing the game when UNC got up by 20. Didn't watch the whole thing.
Yeah.
The only ones that I can think of that buzz killed me that early on were Colt McCoy getting hurt in the national title game, because I think that happened on like the first or second series of the game.
And that just rolled in on the text line.
Did it? Yeah, because that was the Texas-Alabama game. Because
a lot of people think Texas might have been able to win that game with Colt McCoy because the backup came in and had
showing. Gilbert, I can't remember what his name
Garrett was. Gilbert?
Is that who it was?
Gilbert Grape?
So they had that freshman come in and play. It's like, are you kidding me? This kid's going to beat Alabama, really? And the other one that I thought of too, not that it was like the end-all be-all, but when Denver had the safety snap on the opening play of the game.
You did kind of feel on the safety Seahawks are going to run away with it.
Oh, no, that's not a good sign.
I know.
Those are the only two that I can think of buzz killed me that quickly.
Yeah, and obviously those were much bigger circumstances surrounding
those two games.
Championship
game, yeah.
Yeah, you had a lot on the line in that one, whereas this one was just conference setting.
And just real quickly, same sport, kind of same situation, just beginning of the season, Celtics with Hayward last year. That was
game one of the season.
And I think it was maybe Cavs versus Celtics or something.
Yeah, it was Kyrie's return to Cleveland. Game one. Yeah.
Right, so again, not a championship game.
But that's a good one too. I forgot about that.
Everyone was stoked for that one, and then boom, done.
Have we ever seen an athlete be so strong that they burst out of the shoe? I know Nike's really taking it on the chin today from everybody, which, by the way, I'm willing to bet they still rebound with their whole stock down. And
they're going to be okay. It's Nike.
Have we ever seen a foot just go through a shoe like that?
No.
That was insane.
I've never seen anything like that before.
And I love, like, Nike is getting killed, but, like, no other player has had this happen.
No.
Where a foot just bursts through a shoe like the Incredible Hulk is growing.
I'm sure there's been like shoe malfunctions or, you know, something along those lines has happened, but not to the point where you're just cutting and it just falls apart. The best news is that he's not done for the year. Like, it sounds like he's going to be okay. Who knows how long he's going to miss. But the fact that he's not done for the year was the blessing of the night. It's the only thing that saves from... Really went from the most exciting night of the college basketball season to a total absolute dud.
It was a dud. It was a double-digit game most of the way. Did you see quickly, because it was packed. We got the ticker coming up. It was packed in Cameron.
Yeah.
Did you see where they put Shulman and
They were
Billis?
In the rafters, man.
They sat where I sat for the Laker game this year.
They were up in the nosebleeds.
They were at the highest point I think you could be in that arena.
Hey, maybe we're in the front row.
You think Jay Billis got there and was like, wait. We're really up there?
Yeah, why could they not? I mean, don't the commentators usually sit courtside?
I think they had to make room for extra seats because there was such a demand for this game. Dirt, this was the most demanded UNC Carolina or UNC Duke game we've maybe ever had.
Well, and just be thankful you're not one of those people that spent that kind of money.
I
would be losing my mind. If you had that kind of cash and you dropped like $6,000 on a couple of tickets.
Well, if you had that kind of money, I'm sure you're not hurting.
But like, imagine if you like, let's just say you were well off, but not like extremely wealthy. And you were like, all right, I can swing $6,000, but that's like a big ask. And you do that in 36 seconds in what you spent $6,000 to watch just went down the toilet.
Right. Well, and then last night, of course, Zion goes down, sprained knee, by the way. They'll evaluate him, see what his timeline is if he comes back. The conversation naturally shifted to the national people then going and arguing back and forth about should he come back at all? Should he hang him up? Should he go just get ready for the NBA now?
I love how angry people get over that topic.
Yeah, you know who gets the most angry is Doug Gottlieb.
Oh, no. I'm assuming he's on the don't sit outside.
Yes. Okay. He's very, you made a commitment. Why would you not want to compete in the NCAA tournament? You'll never get the chance again. to which almost everybody responded, Doug, you've never been a number one overall pick. Yeah. Stop acting like you know the difference between your career and Zion Williamson.
I bet you could find Doug Gottlieb on his radio show the day that Joey Bosa announced he was sitting out the remainder of the season and hearing him bash him, and then tune in a month when he talks about the NFL draft and how Joey Bosa should be the number one overall pick by the Arizona Cardinals. Because we all had outrage over Joey Bosa. How could you do this? You were committed to the team. This is ridiculous. And everybody forgot about it. Ohio State had a good season.
Yeah.
And now we're leading into the combine, and the conversation around Joey Bosa is not that he quit on his team. It is he's probably going to be the number one overall pick in the NFL draft.
Ohio State won the Rose Bowl, and he's perfectly healthy and going to be the number one pick. I think it worked out for both sides.
Yeah, trust him to make whatever decision is best for him.
He strikes me as a kid that actually, if he's healthy, will play. I think he loves to play basketball. He loves to compete, and that's awesome. I think that's another part of him that kind of brings you into rooting for who Zion is. And look, if he's not 100% and he says, I'm going to be ready in 4 or 5 weeks around tourney time, and he's like, not worth it for me, then so be that too. Like, I don't blame these kids either way. If they want to play, great. If they don't, okay, I get it. You're the number one pick. You just had a scare. You don't want to suffer a more serious injury. You're going to be the face of a franchise. I understand it. I do.
I can't imagine the fear that kind of flashes in front of your eyes when that happens.
Like, I think the thoughts you could hear it in the arena when he fell and he grabbed his knee. Everybody's like, oh.
Like, if he tears his ACL, you're looking at an 8-9 month recovery. You're out for the combine. You're out for the draft. You're going to miss a chunk of your rookie season. Like, that's, I can't imagine the fear that goes through your mind on an injury like that.
Yeah. So Zion goes down 36 seconds, and Duke UNC ends up being a dud. UNC blows them out, wins by double digits. Really good value if you were able to bet UNC on the money line. They got up to 350 before that tip. All right, coming up next, the Daily Ticker. We got two stops to make. We'll do that next, but first, Joe with a sports update.
In this wide world of sports, some stories can slip through the cracks.
Now, before we do this, let's go over the ground rules.
This is the Daily Ticker, where Dirt and Sprague visit the insiders that are covering the stories you've heard about, and some you haven't.
How'd you do that? Actually, I'm not even mad. It's amazing.
The Daily Ticker with Dirt and Sprague on 1080 The Fan.
All right, welcome back in. Running a little behind on the clock here, but time for the Daily Ticker. We got two stops to make, and we're going to start in Seattle. Mike Dugar of The Athletic, Seattle Seahawks beat writer, joining us now on the MVPHomeLoans.com Guild Hotline. Give him a follow on Twitter. Check out his great work at TheAthletic.com. Mike, thanks for joining us here in Portland, man. I'll just start with the big story that came out yesterday. Colin Cowherd plays on our station. He's the show before us. And he started his show yesterday stating that he's hearing Russell Wilson and Sierra going to New York to potentially be the Giants and get the career back on track for Sierra. What say you on the Seahawks trading their franchise quarterback?
I don't think they're going to trade Russell to New York or any team. I'll be honest, I tried not to think about it. Like, I was just relaxing, having a beer with my brother the other day, and then a clip gets sent to me. I'm thinking, oh man, I'm gonna have to answer for this. As you know, almost as if I put it out there, it's like I didn't tell anybody anything about New York. Once it's out there, you know, I like to remind people, and I tweeted about this last night too, and I'll probably write something on The Athletic about it. Is, you know, stuff like this doesn't come from nowhere. Whether it's true or not, you know, it's hard to tell unless you know who it came from, but you know, it's either A, it's true, or someone wants you to think it is. And you can't really ignore either of those things, even if it sounds ludicrous. But I don't think a trade's really going to – I mean, you're not going to trade Russell Wilson, right? Like, good teams in this league stay good because of, like, competent ownership, right? And the bad ones stay bad because of bad ownership. You know, look at the teams who've been bad for a while. They got bad people making decisions. You know, look in Buffalo and Cleveland and so on, you know, like they got in Seattle's been good because they got good people making decisions. A good decision would be to keep, you know, a good quarterback when you have one. Now, does that mean that him and his wife were two very famous people who probably have, you know, bigger aspirations than things they can get done in a market like Seattle? Then yeah, probably. Sure. Everyone probably does if you want to be mega famous, but I don't think it was worth, like when Colin said that, I don't think it was worth everyone going, oh, dang. we're going to trade Russell. What are we going to get? Hopefully get two firsts. It's like, right. No, that's definitely not happening.
Yeah. Well, I think on the follow-up to the conversation he had to me that I think is interesting is what does Seattle do with the contract? Because he's got one more year on his deal. And some Seattle fans seem to think he's going to take a team-friendly deal, and we've talked to other people who would, like, laugh at that notion because of what he's accomplished. So what is kind of the right path here forward for Russell Wilson if you're the GM? I mean, do you just basically bow down and say, whatever you want, we're going to pay you $35 million a year, give you the biggest deal? Do you franchise tag him after this upcoming season? Like, how would you handle his final year under contract and then the negotiation?
How would I handle it if I was who? If I was Russell
if you're the GM, if you're the Seahawks?
Okay, from the Seahawks, because they're definitely going to come at it from two different views. That's, you know, how negotiate goes. All right, and from the Seahawks, you definitely don't just say, hey, what do you want? That would fall under the bad ownership category. That's how you end up paying guys like Brock Osweiler and stuff. You definitely don't ever want to do bad things like that. I wouldn't tag him either. That's just probably – tagging just frustrates people, like your management, the player, because stability is what you want here, like in this business, because all it takes is one play for it all to be taken away from you. So even though a 1 year deal, I think for a tag would be something like $31 million guaranteed, but it's 1 year, right? Like you don't get in this business to just be on a bunch of 1 year deals. You know, that sucks. So I wouldn't try to the tag there. What you would want to do is lock them up as long as possible. Even if the market requires that you make him the highest paid dude, then yeah, you're gonna have to do that. You want to play hardball at first, but you don't want to flirt with the tag really too much. I don't think, because yeah, that's just gonna piss his management way too upset. So I would probably try to lock him up as long as possible, especially with the CBA expiring here pretty soon. That could change a lot of things. So I would try to lock him up and get him in the type of deal that you want for as long as you can.
Mike, I really wish you would have dropped an F-bomb. It would have made it more exciting for us on that end. I'll get you out of here on this one as quickly as possible because we're against the clock. Do they tag Frank Clark or do they reach an agreement with Frank Clark?
Now, see, it's a similar situation. Like, yeah, the tag, you can do it, but you don't want to, right? You're a player, you don't want to be playing on a one-year deal, right? That's why your contract year sucks. If you tag, every year is a contract year. That's terrible. Ideally you'd want to lock guys up, you know, because then it makes your cap situation a bit more flexible too when you can get some long-term extensions and deals put together. They should pay him a long-term deal. Will they tag him? I think so. Mm-hmm. But if they're, like the way I would do it, I would definitely lock him up. You got to lock up your good players. Let your scrub players play on one-year deals. Like, you find elite talent, you keep it.
Yeah. Mike Dugar, Seattle Athletic for the Seahawks beat writer. Thank you so much, Mike. We appreciate the time, man.
Oh, no problem. Thanks for having me.
All right, there we go. Mike Dugar on the Seahawks and Russell Wilson. We'll stay in the NFL, and now we'll go to Pittsburgh with Jacob Klinger of PennLive.com is where you can find his great work. Give him a follow on Twitter, too, Jacob_KLINGER_ is where you can find him for the latest on the Steelers. And we will start Jacob, who's joining us on the MVPHomeLoans.com Guild Hotline, with the Antonio Brown situation. If your best guess, what are they looking for Antonio Brown from another team?
I would guess picks. I think picks is the most viable move here. There's one vein of thought that would suggest the Steelers started picking up a couple late round picks a year or so ago with an idea towards a gradual, I don't want to say rebuild, but a very purposeful transition. And I think that's the move here. I don't even know how long a deal you can sign Ben Roethlisberger to realistically. It's going to be 37 week one next year. So I don't know. I mean, if there's a game changing player available and on the table, sure. But I don't really see it shaking out that easy. So you might get a decent player and some slightly lesser picks, but I think it's picks for sure.
Well, and on that note, I mean, you mentioned Roethlisberger. Antonio Brown, it felt like down the stretch, had an issue with the way the organization handled Roethlisberger, said he had an owner's mentality, felt like the quarterback could get away with whatever he wanted. And then the GM today comes out and says essentially what Antonio Brown said is right, that like Ben can do whatever he wants. Were you surprised by those comments?
I mean, what hasn't Ben Roethlisberger gotten away with as a quarterback for the Pittsburgh Steelers?
Valid.
Very, very, very true. Very valid. Yeah. Yeah, he's been doing this for years.
Do you think that? Do you think it sets Jacob? Do you think it sets the tone? Maybe long way though. When this kind of stuff happens, not to say he's the only quarterback that gets preferential treatment, because that would be ridiculous.
Sure.
But he is also one of the few that's willing to come out, and he does that weekly hit on 93.7 The Fan, and he does say whatever he wants about coaching, about play calling, about players. You don't see that from a lot of other guys. In fact, the only other guy I can think of right now, top of my head, is Aaron Rodgers once in a while.
Yeah.
It feels like everything Pittsburgh has been the last couple of years, which has been good. Does this set the right precedent for the organization, though?
No, of course not. It's an ongoing precedent. And it's interesting you mentioned Aaron Rodgers, because he does it less frequently, and he's in a smaller market with a very popular team, and he's better at quarterback than Ben Roethlisberger is. But he doesn't really do those things. And a lot of times we talk about discipline around the Steelers team and the drama. And I don't think we talk about discipline enough in the context of what the quarterback feels able to throw his bombs upon his teammates, whether it be through the radio or really through the radio or his, like, pet columnist out here. So, yeah, I don't know. Discipline's a heck of a coded word, and for some reason it doesn't stick with Roethlisberger. Hmm. But what has?
Yeah. What's next season look like, in your opinion, if you were projecting on the Steelers? No Le'Veon Bell, feels like no Antonio Brown, Ben Roethlisberger doing whatever he wants, continued. What does it look like, in your opinion, with Mike Tomlin and Roethlisberger next season in Pittsburgh?
I put it like this. I probably said over under for regular season wins about 9.5. You know, they might piece it together anyway. This defense could continue to gradually turn that corner with the steering circumference of the steering radius, sorry, of a, you know, middle school bus. But I mean, they might squeak it through, but there's barring them just making out with highway robbery in this trade, I have a real hard time seeing them, you know, becoming a wildly different team. The NFL is sort of, you know, built towards mediocrity and parity for billionaires. So, you know, you could see where maybe they just get hot down the stretch and make the run like they did back in Cowher's second to last season. But they don't strike me as a Super Bowl team right now. They're taking steps back and, you know, saying it's Ben Roethlisberger's school bus and everybody aboard. That's only going to take you so far.
Yeah. You know, Jacob, I'll get you out of here with this comment. It feels like you are destined for super hot takes at some point, and I can't wait to read them because they've been great on this show. I appreciate them.
Here's the thing. I'm not a takes guy. Like,
I know.
I've been like a boringly, like, gray old lady in terms of my, like, journalistic upbringing. I'm 25 years old. But, like, this is absurd. The general manager goes and says, yeah, you know, like, if a quarterback wants to throw me under the bus, it's cool. Well, I'm glad you're giving his permission, because he already did it last year, like when they drafted Mason Rudolph. So, like, I mean, it's not takes. It's just the facts of the situation.
I know.
Like, but you can't answer that question. I already asked you twice. So
that's true. That's true. Jacob Klinger, PennLive.com. He's the Steeler beat writer. Give him a follow on Twitter at Jacob_KLINGER_. Thanks so much for the time, Jacob. We appreciate it, man.
Hey, likewise. See ya.
There we go. We went to Pittsburgh, went to Seattle for the Daily Ticker.
Might be the most interesting group of ticker interviews we've ever done, man. that was fun.
All right, coming up next.
Somebody said, now I can't get the vision out of my head. Somebody sounds like he sounds like Leon Phelps, ladies man.
Yeah, that's what he sounded like.
He did.
But then he dropped the thing where he said he identifies as, what did he say, an old lady?
I'm like an old lady, an old gray lady with my writing.
I'm an old gray lady.
But I'm only 25. I'm a fan of that guy, man. That was great. And then we had the Seattle guy thinking he cussed on the air, and he's like, oh, what the hell? I already said it.
Can I say piss? Oh, it's too late now.
He just steamrolls right through it, man.
And then I asked him, hey, what's your gut say? Do they tag Frank Clark or get a deal? And he goes, see, that's the thing. You don't want a one-year deal. I know. But what do you think they're going to choose?
I love the ticker, man. All right. I love the ticker.
Coming up next, Jim Boeheim kills a guy on The Fan.
Feeling my way through the darkness, guided by a beating heart. I can't tell where the journey will end.
This is Dirt and Sprague, Gone 1080, The Fan. They tell me I'm too young.
All right, John Wilner's going to join us at 1. I promise he won't be high as a kite.
No edibles for Wilner.
Do you know how I think we're all coming to the same conclusion that we think the second guest on the ticker was high?
Yeah, a little bit, yeah. Yeah, that would be my take on it.
Well, you
which
know.
Which is, hey, there's nothing wrong with that. You know, I have a fun interview.
I'm the one that books the ticker every day. I created the ticker thinking Swigart would do it. He doesn't do it.
No, you created more work for yourself.
Yeah, which was just stupid.
Yeah. Very short-sighted on your part.
And yeah, because the first time I did it, Joe's just cracking up. The first time I introduced the ticker to Swag.
He was gone when you thought of the segment.
I know. And then when he came back, I told him what we were doing, and he looked at me with a blank stare, and I'm not verbatim. So I'm supposed to go book 2 people every day?
That was his response.
Yes, I have done it. I've done it. It's possible.
No, you're going to do this every day.
And then he doesn't like to call people, so then he waits on email and people don't respond. Anyways, it's a whole thing. I knew that we may have been screwed because when I called that guy, he answered was like, hello?
Hello?
No, I think he ate it. And I was like, hey, man, so-and-so, want to get you on, talk Pittsburgh Steelers. And he goes, okay. Basically, and I just took it down. I said, we need the second for the ticker, so whatever. There we go. We live and learn. Hey, Jim Boeheim killed a guy.
This is a really tragic story.
So if you have not read up on it, Jim Boeheim struck a man last night at 11:30 on Interstate 690 over there in New York. The occupants exited the vehicle, proceeded to walk on the highway within close proximity to the vehicle. There was a car crash. They were involved. They were in the middle of the road, and an individual came out of the car, and Jim Boeheim did not see him. He struck the individual. The guy later died at the hospital from the injuries. Jim Boeheim, by the way, they took a sobriety test. Nothing, no trace of anything, 0.0. I can't imagine where he's at mentally today. Just anybody that has to go through something like this for the family's sake and for the person who, you know, is involved in hitting an individual. I had a classmate. This happened to her when she was 16. She was driving up Sandy, and it was so sunny, and it reflected, and her window was kind of dirty.
Mm-hmm.
She could not see, and in that brief second she couldn't see, a person stepped off a curb. She went right over him.
Yeah.
And ended up killing him. It was a horrific deal, but this happened to Jim Boeheim yesterday.
Yeah, the only positive out of this was that he wasn't drinking, because it just becomes such a bigger story at that point, and his career's done. He's going to jail. But I just, like, what a tragic situation and circumstance where there was an accident before him, and the car somehow it ran off, you know, hit the guardrail, spun out, and was essentially, it sounds like, in the middle of the road, kind of blocking the street that he was driving on, and he was going down. He realized that there was a car in the middle of the road. He tried to swerve out of the way to avoid running into the car that was parked there, or not parked, but it just ended up in the middle of the road. And in swerving out of the way, he ended up hitting the other guy. This is tragic. They had a big win last night from a sports perspective. He was out to dinner, it sounds like, with some family and friends afterwards, celebrating their big 20-point win over Louisville, and he was driving home, and this happened. So I can't imagine the emotions that go through your mind having something like that happen to you.
They play Duke in a, like, is he
Saturday.
Coach?
Saturday.
Does he coach that game? I mean, what do you do in this situation? Because he doesn't drink. His family came out, and they were like, he does not drink alcohol.
Yeah.
This sounds like a matter of, like, not seeing an individual who's...
Well, I think he just was swerving, and the guy happened... I mean, the car was in the middle of the road, so he's driving, the car's stuck. It sounds like there's bad weather. Car's stuck in the middle of the road. So just imagine you're driving down a highway at night, and there's a 2-lane highway.
32 degrees, by the way, with light freezing rain.
Right, so you're driving down the highway, and you realize, you know, well, 50 yards out or so, when you can finally see it, there's just a car in the middle of the road that's probably spun sideways from the original accident. Your response to that is to be, A, try and slow down, but if it's snowing, you're not going to be able to do it right away, and B, you're going to move out of the way so you don't run into the car.
Well, doing
that, he hit the guy.
You see those videos from, like, the snowstorms and Midwest, wherever, where people are on the freeway and they get in these, like, 20-car pileups.
You see that one in Missouri a couple days ago?
Yeah.
Between the two semis, these cars, it was such a bad winter storm, they couldn't really see ahead of them, and these two semis were stuck. Two other cars had crashed, so basically you had a pile. But these cars were just coming in at like 15, 20 miles an hour. They didn't see it, and it was too late. And when they stopped, they'd just slide. I think one person, the last I had seen on that story, one person had lost their life, but like it was a massive pileup.
That's how that happens. I mean, like all those conditions and reaction time, people just underestimate the how quickly you can react to something like that.
I mean, that's,
and you really can't.
I hate pulling over to the side, even just like for a standard reason. I hate walking on the side. That is the worst part. I'll tell you, this is easily the thing I hate about the Hood to Coast. I have to run on the side of two highways on two different legs. Mm-hmm. The third one's usually at a time where there's no cars out. But the first two, I hate running on the side of the highway up to Mount Hood, but coming down Mount Hood. And then the second one is on, what is that? Is it Highway 30 over there by St. On the way to St. Helens?
Yeah.
I have to run that, and I just, the entire time, I'm thinking about it the entire time is one person just needs to take a second on the cell phone.
Sure, just to swerve just slightly to the right, and you're done.
And I'm done. Yeah. I'm cooked.
I think about that because I'm in my neighborhood where I live. I live in a cul-de-sac, and whenever we take the dog for a walk and stuff, there's no sidewalks in my cul-de-sac. And for like a block, there's no sidewalk on the side of a road.
Yeah, yours is like a sliver and then like a ditch almost, right?
Right.
Yeah.
So you have to, like, when we take our dog for a walk, we have to walk along the road of essentially a relatively busy road just to get to the sidewalk to walk the dog. And I think about it every time I take them out. I'm like, God, just stay to the side. Like, hope everybody's paying attention as they're driving by, because that's all it takes, man.
Yeah. All right, we got a loaded second hour. We're going to start. The Pac-12 has been written and talked about a lot. And John Wilner, the Bay Area News Group, he just wrote a really good piece about it. We'll get the latest on the Pac-12 with John Wilner next hour, two straight ahead on The Fan.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too, with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.